listening to the Apollo Podcast Network. One.
Ready to launch yourself in the latest Rockets news. You're listening to the Launchpad Podcast, presented by Apollo Media, all Houston, all original. I am your host, LaShard Binkley. I am a staff writer for the Dream Shake. Of course, you can always find me on Twitter, HJohnForLife40, all caps. And I also cover the Rio Grande Valley Vipers, who are one of only two undefeated teams left in the G League. So you definitely want to make sure you're checking them out. Be sure to follow official Apollo Media account at Apollo HOU, as well as hitting the subscribe button on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. Of course, we would greatly appreciate it. And on today's show, I have two special guests, two legends of Rockets Twitter that a lot of y'all probably already know. And it's great to have them on the show together. Actually, Tony, this is your second time on the Launchpad, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Number two.
Yes. And we have Okan. This is actually his first time on. And I'm sure y'all have seen him on Rockets Twitter a lot. And before I get started, I'll start off with you, Okan. Why don't you introduce yourself to the Launchpad audience out there?
What's up, Rockets fans? My name is Okan Antia. I go by the handle Okeezy Sports PT on Twitter. I'm a board certified sports physical therapist, Rocket season ticket holder, and ready to get started.
Of course, of course. And Tony, if you can let everybody know where they can find you at.
Yes, sir. My name is Tony Coleman. I'm a semi-professional basketball analyst, professional trash talker.
Yes,
you can catch me on Twitter at Coltrane_TNT.
Yeah, that's why I want to have both of y'all on, because I know y'all don't hold back. And that's a good thing, because, you know, sometimes you just need to let people know exactly what they're saying ain't the right thing they're saying. So I appreciate both of y'all jumping on today.
Glad to be here.
All right. And of course, on today's show, we're going to be going over, you know, the Rockets season as a whole. They actually break their 15-game losing streak. We're going to be talking about that in the first segment. In the second segment, we're going to be, you know, talking about the Jalen Green injury that happened last game. And of course, we have, you know, Okan on here, who's actually our resident expert on this, who I always go to when I have questions about injuries. So it's definitely a great time having him on. So we're going to be talking about that, and then the rotations as a whole. And then the last segment, kind of just go over the upcoming games that the Rockets have. They have one tonight versus Charlotte, which ought to be a pretty entertaining game. So we're going to be talking about that in the last segment. So I want to go ahead and kick it off with just, you know, since I haven't really had a chance on the podcast to talk about the overall season with the two guys on today. So I want to start off with that. Tony, why don't you lead us off? What's kind of been your impression overall on the season? You know, that some people are kind of going crazy over, even though we knew it was going to be a rebuilding season when we started. So what's kind of been your opinion on the season as a whole?
Well, my overall impressions are that I can see what Stone and Silas are trying to do. It's going to take time. I think a lot of us with common sense knew. for one, the Rockets are taking efficient shots, which is very good. They're getting to the free throw line, which is also good. Their defense, I believe, is way ahead of where anybody thought it would be at this point. But guys have to be disciplined. They're not making shots that they should make. They're not making passes that they should make. And, of course, they're not hitting their free throws, which has led to a lot of the losing. And it's a process. I mean, you have to give it time. I mean, it doesn't happen overnight. It's not going to happen overnight. And we have to get some continuity with the Rockets. You can't keep changing coaches. You can't keep changing GMs. You can't keep just trading players in and out and thinking that this thing is just going to turn itself around. I mean, it's a long vision, but you have to see it through to the end. And right now we're at the beginning and people want it to be at the end. And that's just not how it's going to be.
And Okan, what's kind of your opinion so far on the Rockets season?
I actually agree with pretty much everything that Tony just said. If anybody's followed any of my tweets, the defensive efficiency and how well they're playing on defense has been my biggest takeaway over everything, because that tells me a couple of things. One, it tells me that the guys are being coached to play defense and the strategies are actually working. And two, it tells me that they're playing hard. So to me, you know, the turnovers, the missed shots, the missed free throws, those are things that all need to improve. But with young players, if you can get effort out of them and you can get them to play hard, the other stuff will take care of itself. So if they're not playing defense, they're not guarding, and people are just having a layup line versus us, then that tells me that the coaches aren't having an effect, and that the players aren't, you know, they're worried about their stats or their shooting and they're not worried about winning. So building winning habits means, regardless of how you shoot or play on offense, you lock in on defense, and the effort that they're giving on defense is above and beyond my wildest expectations. I thought the offense would carry us and the defense was going to be terrible, and it's actually been the opposite. And if I had to choose which one I'd rather them be better at right now, I think I'd choose defense, because I know Jalen Green is going to score. I know Christian Wood is going to score. I know Kevin Porter Jr. is going to score. You know, these guys are scorers. When they find their rhythm, they're going to score. But we were not sure that any of them were going to play anything similar to passable NBA defense consistently. And so the fact that they're doing that is my biggest takeaway from the beginning of the season. You know, we can discuss rotations and all that and stuff, and I'm sure we will, but you can't deny how hard the team is playing. And, you know, a couple of Kevin Porter Jr. last second shots go down and you beat Denver and the LA Lakers on the road. And so we can't lose sight of the reason why we were even in those games was how well they were playing defensively. So,
yeah, and I'm glad y'all brought that up, because that's something I try to point out all the time on Twitter, is sometimes you got to go a little bit deeper than just, you know, looking at the record. I mean, they were top five in points in the paint. They were top of the league when it comes to wide open threes and open threes. And then, you know, they also top of the league. I mean, it's not even close in free throw attempts. But that lets you know that they're getting the shots they're supposed to get. They're just not making them. And, you know, that kind of leads me into my second part of this first segment. I want to ask y'all about Coach Silas, because, of course, we all saw the report. Whether it's true or not, it's kind of hard to say, because, I mean, these days anybody can just say sources, and sources can be the popcorn vendor. We don't really know who their sources are. But we all saw the reports that Coach Silas, you know, possibly was on a hot seat. They were reevaluating whether, you know, Coach Silas was doing a good job or not, and whether he should keep his job. But I want to ask you, let's go ahead and kick off with you, Okan. What is your opinion of Coach Silas so far? You already kind of talked about that, you know, mentioning that the Rockets are playing a good defense and they were doing some of the things that coaches, you know, if they're actually doing their job, that teams will start to do well. And then we saw that the Rockets are already doing that well. So what's kind of been your opinion of Coach Silas, and what's your opinion of, you know, the report out that the Rockets were reevaluating his, you know, coaching job already, you know, year two into his tenure?
So I'll start off with the reports. I don't believe the reports are actually factual. I feel like there's someone semi close to the situation that, you know, probably wanted some changes made as far as like the rotation. And so you felt like putting that out into the atmosphere would light a fire under the players, maybe light a fire under Silas to, you know, make some adjustments or changes. The owner or the GM, because from what I can see, Stone and Silas are in lockstep on everything. And so I don't think that Stone is, you know, secretly whispering to someone that, man, I think we're going to get rid of him, because, you know, at the end of the day, when you have a new GM and a new coach come in together, they're kind of tied at the hip. And so if Stone is looking at getting rid of Silas, then he's got to watch his own back, because obviously he's either going out with Silas or he's going to be next. And so I don't think that that's a report that's accurate. I think it, you know, even if you read the story, it was very, very light in details. It was, it was very speculative. It was, I feel like it was something that was out, that was put out there just to stir the pot, but I don't think it's legitimate, nor do I think it should be legitimate. I think I do have a bone to pick with some of Silas's rotations. I think the Chicago game corrected a lot of what I was having an issue with, and that came to, you know, the players that are playing the best during any given game should be the ones that close the game. And I'm not sold on, especially with a young team, just putting the starters back in no matter what, under any circumstances. If Garrison Matthews and Daniel House or KJ Martin, if they're playing better that game, then they should finish. I don't think we should have just automatically returned to, you know, Jayshon Tate or Daniel Tice or Eric Gordon or whoever is started that game. If they're not playing well and there's someone off the bench that is playing well, I think those people should finish. And I also don't think you can close the game with a lack of spacing. We saw in a couple of games back to back, right? We had a close game. You know, we have Tate in there, gets wide open three, misses it. He could have tied the game. We end up going the other way, losing the game. The same spot, which would have been Tate if he would have left him in this time, it was Garrison Matthews, hits the three, we win the game, right? And so, you know, I think you have to go with the hot hand, and you have to make sure that your spacing and your shooting is good. I mean, it's great to play great defense and lock up, but you still got to score the ball. And if the other team doesn't respect the people out there shooting, then you're going to have a very cramped offense. And so, you know, regardless of who starts, I think we need to finish with a spread floor and with the people that are playing well. And so some of that was my contention with Silas. You know, other than that, I mean, the players, they obviously love playing for him. They like him. They play hard for him. And so to me, those are the most important. But when you're coming, when it comes to a game in, game out, I feel like he should be more flexible with who finishes. And we also saw in the last game, some of y'all know that I was calling for more pick and rolls with KPJ and Christian Wood. When we did the spaces, and I was calling for that. And sure enough, he ran a bunch of pick and rolls. KPJ got in a rhythm. Christian Wood got in a rhythm. And after the game, if you listen to the interview, Christian Wood mentioned multiple times about getting in more pick and rolls and stuff. And so I think that's a simple way to let the players play to their strengths while they learn where each other wants the ball and they learn the motion offense and the five out. All that's great, but we've got some good offensive players with natural pick and roll skills. And I think until they get better at the other stuff, we just need to ride that till the wheels come off.
Yeah. And Tony, what was your opinion on, you know, we kind of combined this, your opinion of their last game, the way the Rockets, you know, ran out their rotations and were actually making shots. What's your opinion on that? And just opinion on the report that was out about Coach Silas.
I'll start with the report like Ocon did. To tell you the truth, I didn't read the report, mostly because I could tell how national media works. And when I didn't hear anything from local media about this at all, and then this report comes out, I'm thinking, I just threw it away, to tell you the truth. And my opinion is it would be a grave mistake to fire Silas this early. And not so much from an X's and O's basketball perspective, but more from how are you going to be looked at as a team in the league if everyone knows what happened to Silas when he was brought in. He was brought in to coach a team that was on the cusp of winning the championship, and he immediately gets the rug pulled out from under him. And within a year and a half, you're going to fire this guy that's been waiting his whole life to coach a basketball team. And that's, I mean, that's going to leave a sour taste, one, in the coaches union. Two, it's not going to look good for the team towards the rest of the league that, you know, Silas would set him to fail and then you make him the scapegoat. So I think that would be a horrible mistake. I think that Coach Silas is the guy to see this through and that he should be given a chance and given the time to actually get a competitive level team to coach up and to turn into a contender instead of just taking the easy way out and firing him the first chance you get. As far as the Bulls game, I agree with a lot of what Okan said. He changed the lineups and he actually went with the hot hand, which was excellent. I believe that his philosophy going into the season was that he had basically a brand new team from last year. People see similar names from last year to this year. And on the outside, it looks like he's bringing back a lot of the same team. But if you look at it in context, he actually brought back an entirely different team because Wood didn't play a lot last year. Kevin Porter Jr. didn't play a lot last year. I mean, Tate was like the only guy that played most of the games. I mean, and you're adding Armani, you're adding Matthews, you're adding Green, you're adding Sengun, who is way over where he should be as a rookie. And you're just adding so much to the team that I think he came out with, these are the guys that I want to go with to start, and I want to see how it flows through the season. And I think he gave himself a certain limit of games where these are the lineups that he was going to go with. And I think that's where a lot of people got upset because it looked stubborn. And I think it was more of he needed to get familiar with the new players and the new lineups that he was bringing on. And I think that he got to the point where it was like, okay, I got a good handle on the players and what they do well and what they don't do well. And then now he's getting comfortable with switching up lineups and things like that. And I think that showed in the Bulls game.
Yeah, and I agree with both of y'all. And another thing people got to keep in mind is these coaches want to win games. Fans just think, oh, well, tank, lose games. You know, they say that until they actually see it on the court. Then all of a sudden they get mad and want everybody fired. But, you know, they see this is how it looks. It gets ugly. Rebuilds aren't pretty. I mean, it's no pretty way to do a rebuild. I mean, I know everybody wants the young players to play, but coaches and GM, they like keeping their jobs. So they're going to start off, they're going to play these veterans because they're used to seeing them on the court. They know that they know how to play the game. And they, a lot of time, maybe they see some in practice that we don't see. And it's a good thing that only what are we, 18 games into the season? And, you know, he's already changing his rotation. A lot of coaches wouldn't do that. I mean, we saw that for years with Mike D'Antoni. Mike D'Antoni would not play rookies or second year players. No matter what, he will stick with his veterans. He was stubborn that way. He's been in the league for so long. He wouldn't change his ways, but it's good to see that Coach Silas, you know, regardless of what was going on around him, he stuck to his guns till he felt comfortable playing these guys. So going forward, we'll see how that works out, but they definitely worked out in his last game and also helped that they were making shots. I mean, that always makes the offense look a lot better when you're actually making shots. So, I mean, I think that's something we need to keep in mind. We, you know, look at the tonight's game against Charlotte. So that's going to wrap it up for the first segment. Second segment, we're going to be going over the Jalen Green injury and how that's going to kind of pack the rotation going forward. And then again, in the last segment, we're going to be talking about the upcoming schedule and also talking about the big matchup in college last night that, you know, all Rockets fans were paying attention to, and Duke and Gonzaga. I'm going to get the fellas' opinion on that. So please stick around.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And welcome back to Launchpad Podcast, presented by Apollo Media. And in the second segment, I want to get the guys' opinion on the Jalen Green injury. Unfortunately, that happened last game, right when the Rockets got back Kevin Porter Jr. For the Chicago Bulls game. I want to get the fellas' opinion on that. So I'm going to go ahead and kick that off and start with that. And O'Connor is our resident medical expert, so we're going to start off with him. We actually talked about this a little bit for my article in the Dream Shake about, you know, possible Jalen Green timetable and how that may affect him going forward the rest of the season when he does come back. So why don't you go ahead and kick us off with that, Okan? What's your opinion on the timetable for when Jalen Green could be back and the type of injury that he has? And also, you know, how or if this would affect him going on for the rest of the season, even when he does get back on the court?
Thank you. Thank you. So as somebody, some of you guys have seen, I did put out a few tweets about it. And then, of course, Lashard's article through the Dream Shake had some more stuff inside. But basically what we're looking at from all the speculation and reports that I see is we're looking at a grade one hamstring injury. The fact that the team said he would be reevaluated in a week is a dead giveaway that it's minor. Grade two, you're looking at 4 to 6 weeks, and usually you're gonna say you're gonna reevaluate in 2 to 3 weeks. So if you're willing to reevaluate in 1 week, then you're saying it's a more of a shorter term injury. So with a grade one, we're more in that 2 to 4 week time frame. Now, I did mention that there's a little bit of a distinction between the injury that Jalen Green suffered this past game and the one that he had in summer league, and the hamstring injuries that we see most athletes have that are considered non-contact hamstring injuries. This one appeared to be caused by the fact that there was a counterforce being pushed against Jalen as he jumped up to finish at the rim. And so that counterforce, when you're trying to explode up, would require your muscles to fire harder than what they were planning to unexpectedly. And that can cause an acute strain. A non-contact hamstring injury happens when you have muscle imbalances across the lower extremity, so the side that you injure the hamstring on, where your hamstring is getting overworked and overstressed. Your hamstring is trying to compensate for other weak muscles that are there, and so it gets overused and overworked, and it strains. And so non-contact hamstring injuries are more concerning from a rehabilitation perspective because they're muscle imbalances that have to be corrected. Otherwise, you'll re-injure the hamstring. And that's why you see so many recurrences. It's because there hasn't been enough time for those muscle imbalances to be addressed. Muscle strength takes, you know, a certain amount of time to take place. You don't just get stronger in 1 week or 4 days or 2 weeks. And so if your issue is related to a strength deficit, it takes a little while for that strength deficit to be resolved through the rehab process. And so when players try to come back too early before that process happens, they will re-injure it. And that's why people are used to hamstring injuries happening 1, 2, 3 times. It's because they haven't resolved the imbalances that caused it. And they're trying to start playing when they feel better, when it doesn't hurt. And that's not when you're ready. When you're ready, when all of the muscles around there are strong enough to pull their weight, allowing the hamstring to, quote unquote, take a break and just pull the weight that it's supposed to pull. And so with Jalen Green having a contact hamstring injury, we're not assuming that he has those deficits around, because he had something else that caused him to have the hamstring injury versus when he was in summer league and he was just jumping and had it happen. That's a more traditional non-contact hamstring injury route. And that's why it took him longer to recover from, you know, he did a few weeks after summer league. It was like 4 to 6 weeks of rehab to get that better, but he was deficient there. On this one, he was actually, if he hadn't been touched, he wouldn't have had a hamstring injury. So we consider that a contact one. And long-term, it's better and less likely that he'll have a recurrence of it as long as they make sure it's healed when he starts playing again.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's good points as far as not rushing him back, because you don't want this to keep happening throughout the year, especially with a young player trying to develop the rest of his game. So I think that's a really good point that the Rockets need to let this heal and be patient. I mean, you're already in rebuilding season. There's really no reason to rush Jalen Green back. You want to make sure he's 100% healthy. So that kind of leads me to my second question. Tony, I want to ask you, as far as the rotation, what would you do going forward? Who would you have in the starting spot? You know, who would – do you think that they possibly should bring Josh Christopher back from the G League, or would you just leave him in the G League, let him continue to run the point guard position and develop there, and just kind of just rework the rotation that you already have?
Well, to tell you the truth, I really don't think there's any right or wrong answer per se as far as this goes. You could bring Christopher back to run the starting point with KPJ running the two. I mean, that's a good option. You could run maybe Matthews starting at the two with KPJ. You could also have House run the two. That just depends on whether his head's on straight. So, I mean, it depends. I mean, like I said, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. Because again, we're in a rebuild. So it's not like, you know, we have the expectations of winning a championship. So we have to win all these games. I think that any decision should go towards player and team development more than what's best in winning and losing. So that's the approach I would take, is what's best to develop the team and develop the individual players than to what's more cohesive to winning and losing. So that's the approach I would take.
And also, just kind of speaking on Jalen Green, I'll start with you, Tony, on this. What's been your opinion of him so far? Because we all saw, I mean, I think the problem happened when people were going overboard with their praise before the season started, with, you know, only seeing him in 15 G League games. You know, thinking he's going to come in, he's going to start shooting like Steph Curry, he's going to average 25 points a game. And now people are kind of starting to say, well, now he's not doing what he's supposed to do, even though, honestly, in my opinion, he's exactly where he should be, considering he's 19 years old and he's barely played any professional basketball at all. I mean, you look at Şengün, he's played pro ball for like last 7-8 years. He's a EuroLeague MVP. So he has a lot more experience even at a young age than Jalen Green has. So what's been kind of your opinion just overall on Jalen Green so far, leading up to before he had the injury against the Bulls?
My overall opinion is that I believe this is just me watching him, is we got a stud. I mean, if you look at his the thing that bothers me a lot is that a lot of fans are looking at makes and misses, what goes in, what doesn't go in. And that is not what you should be looking at. I mean, you have to look at what does his offensive game look like. And if you look at his offensive game, I mean, this guy is a polished scorer. I mean, he's got counter moves. He's got a good first step. I mean, actually, he's got one of the quickest first steps that you can probably find in the league right now. You look at his dribble moves. You look at just his offensive just skill set, and he's got it all. He just has to put it all together and learn how to play in the NBA. Because if you look at him and how he plays, he's used to playing against people that he can dominate, and you can tell. Like, a lot of those moves that he does in the NBA, if he goes to NCAA with those same moves, I mean, he's probably scored 20, 25 a game easily.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, I mean, the NBA, you got guys that are – this is their profession. I mean, this is their life. This is what they do. This is what they eat, sleep, breathe. And he's trying to figure that out. Like, how do I take my game up to another level to where I can dominate these guys like I'm dominating – like I would dominate kids in college? And that's for any NBA rookie, which is like, I don't understand why it's any different between for him like it is for any other NBA rookie. I mean, if you look at his raw stats, besides the shooting numbers, he's not doing that bad. I mean, of course his shooting numbers need to come up if he's going to elevate himself. But as far as everything else, I mean, he's doing pretty well as far as rookies go. So I would ask for people to be patient, and the second half of the season is where you really need to start evaluating Jalen Green, because first half is going to be a wash. I mean, that's with everybody. I think also he's hindered by looking at guys like Şengün and Evan Mobley that have come out like immediately and made an impact. But, I mean, those guys are big men, so they're taking shots at the rim while he's shooting threes, mid-ranges, and having to get to the rim with a slight frame. So I think people just need to be patient. But I think he's where he needs to be.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up, about Şengün and about Evan Mobley. I mean, everybody know I was Evan Mobley for pretty much the entire offseason, but – you have to look at their situation as far as their teams. Cleveland is in a better spot than the Rockets are. They have better players around him. And he also, of course, he was going to affect the game more early on because he does more than just, you know, the scoring aspect of it. He's also a big man that can rebound and block shots. So, of course, it's going to look better, you know, if you're just looking at box scores than what Jalen Green's doing. But Jalen Green's fine. He's getting the exact type of shot you want him to get. He's going to start actually scoring more once he actually gets a lot of these calls he's not getting at the rim. Because if you look at most players in the league that are leading the league in scoring, it's because they're getting to the free throw line. And right now, refs are just not giving Jalen Green those calls. So that's another thing people need to factor in. So, like you said, I think Jalen Green is in the perfect spot where he needs to be. You look at Anthony Edwards last year, same thing. He struggled for most of the first half, and then all of a sudden he came on and almost won Rookie of the Year. So, and LaMelo Ball actually started off on the bench. So, I mean, you can't really, you know, put everything on somebody, especially 19 years old, in the first half of that first season. Okan, what's your opinion on Jalen Green so far, and what have you seen from him in his first, you know, handful of games in the NBA?
So I will start off, I'll preface this by saying, similar to LaShard, I was Team Mobley until probably a week before the draft, when we all understood and realized that it was going to be Green. And I was Team Mobley barely. So I was never a Jalen hater. Yeah. I was Team Mobley. And the reason why I was Team Mobley was for the same reasons that we're seeing with Jalen Green now. It takes wing scorers longer to make an impact. And so I was looking at the fact that Mobley's defense and rebounding, that he could affect the game while his offense was developing, whereas Jalen's impact would be less until he got his scoring chops. And so I haven't seen anything from Jalen that I haven't expected. And to me, the people that are upset is because they were team, they were the Green Gang, but they were expecting him to come average 25. And I never did. And so the fact that he's struggling, if you go look at, you know, Zach LaVine, Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, James Harden, you go look at all these high scoring two guards within their first two or three years, he's just like the rest of them. And then if you look at Anthony Edwards from last year, same thing. Scoring guards take a while to to develop and to figure out what's a good shot, what's not a good shot, where are my spots, where do I want to attack from, how do I want to do this, how do I want to do that. They're learning all that on the fly, and they're taking shots that are more difficult than a big man who's in the paint. You know, Jalen Green is taking contested step backs, and he's taking, you know, 28 footers, and these aren't easy shots. And so if you're taking tough shots and you're still trying to figure out where you're going to get your offense from, you're going to see some ugliness in the numbers. But to me, that should have been expected. And the fact that folks thought it wouldn't, that he was, you know, oblivious to that, you know, is why people are disappointed. The fact that we got Şengün in the draft, the fact that we got Jalen and Şengün means I will never be the guy that says, you know, I told you so and we should have drafted Mobley, because to me, I like actually the Green and Şengün pairing better than Mobley and whatever wing we would have gotten. And so the fact that Stone pulled off getting both of them means that I'll never second guess it, because if you're second guessing the Mobley versus Green, then you're basically saying you don't think Şengün can be a legit NBA starter in the front court. You aren't taking Mobley and Şengün together. So if you drafted Mobley, Şengün is out, and then you're probably waiting till pick 23 and 24 to pick, you know, Josh Christopher or Cam Thomas or somebody else that's going to be the bucket getter that Jalen Green is. And so just when you look at it in totality, which is what you should do, then the Rockets did nothing wrong by taking Green. And I'm 100% pleased with the draft, and Green is right where I think he should be and where I expected him to be. And Mobley's where I expected him to be as well, which is changing the game and affecting the game on the defensive end. Also, the fact that the Rockets are playing such good defense without Mobley, which is what I didn't think was going to happen. As I mentioned earlier, I thought we would need somebody like Mobley on the court so that the defense would be even half serviceable. The fact that we're playing great defense without somebody like that in the front court and what Şengün is doing on defense makes it even more that this was the right path. And so I have no qualms about the way the draft went. We have a good defense without Evan Mobley, and you know, Jalen Green is going to lead this league in scoring at some point. That's never been in doubt. We know that's going to happen. And so it's just a matter of when.
Yeah, I think I try to tell people that all the time, that if you draft Evan Mobley, you're not drafting Şengün. I know people are going back and forth with me on that, but I don't see any path to where, why would you draft two bigs as your first two picks? So people need to keep that
and
in mind.
You have Christian Wood on the roster. Exactly. You're not going to draft Şengün, Mobley, and you still have Christian Wood, who's your going into the season as your best player. What does that tell him? Oh, we're just going to, you know, when you draft the two lottery pick bigs and you play you're a big, you're the best player on the team. Like, what are you telling him? So you think Christian Wood is a part of your future? Taking two bigs like that is not even in question. You know, you take Garuba later. To me, Garuba is a person that could fit with Christian Wood or with Şengün. So he's like a perfect third big if you're going with those two as your front court, because he could play with either one of them. So I see the fit of Garuba, but I don't see drafting Mobley and Şengün together. I just don't see that at all.
Yeah.
With Wood on the roster already.
I mean, exactly. I know some people are bringing up where they signed Daniel Tice, but as you can see, I think Daniel Tice was a low risk type of thing, because they have no problem, as you see now, giving him a DMP. But if you're drafting Mobley and Şengün, and Shangoon's playing the way he's playing, and you still have Christian Wood, there's no way any of those guys are getting DMPs. So, yeah, Green and Şengün are a package deal, and I think that's the way people need to look at it going forward when they're talking about Evan Mobley, that the Rockets got exactly what they wanted, actually more, because there's no way they thought Şengün was going to be as good as he already is. So I think the Rockets are exactly where they want to be as far as who they drafted. And, you know, we, like I said, some of us were Team Mobley, but I'm the same as you. I was never so far T-Mobley that I thought Jalen Green was going to be horrible. So I had zero problem with them drafting Jalen Green. And speaking of the draft, coming up in the last segment, we're going to be talking about the big game that happened yesterday between Duke and Gonzaga, where we saw Paolo Banchero and Chet Holmgren go pretty much one-on-one the entire game. And so I want to get the guys' opinion on that. And also a little bit of the upcoming schedule as the Rockets are playing out several more games to end the year. So please stick around.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And continue here on the Launchpad Podcast presented by Apollo Media. If you enjoy the show, do us a favor and drop a review or leave us some stars. All right, in this final segment, I'll be getting Tony and O'Connor's opinion on not really just the game yesterday, even though it was a great game, but just really the two prospects, the top prospects that were playing yesterday. And unfortunately, this is kind of how it's going to be all year. Hopefully, this is the last year we'll be doing this so early because I'm not a draft expert, so talking about draft picks all year long kind of runs me crazy. But, hey, it's a necessary evil right now for the Rockets. So I want to kick it off by asking you, Akon, what's your opinion overall on Paolo Banchero and Chet Holmgren and Jabari Smith? Who are you kind of leaning towards right now? Are you even leaning towards anybody since it's just really early? Who do you like so far as the draft prospects?
So from my perspective, and it's still really early, I haven't decided which way that I lean yet. I think which one you take is more of a philosophical decision at this point versus like who's the better player at this moment. I think, you know, Banchero is 6'10", 250. And Chet Holmgren is 7 feet tall and he's not even 200 pounds.
Yeah.
And so I feel like if you're gonna ride with Christian Wood and Sengun for the future, then I think, you know, Chet Holmgren looks like Poku out there. I think he has some skills to play like a super long three. And yeah. So, you know, I think he could play the three position and hold his own defensively, obviously, with the shot blocking and his quickness, his handle. You know, I think he could do the Poku, the KD thing where he's a three man at that size. I don't think there's any chance he's going to play the five. And so I think you could take Chet and have him play a 3-4 hybrid. I think if you're taking Banchero, I think, you know, Christian Wood is on borrowed time because I don't think he can play the three position. And no. if you're assuming Sengun is locked in, which you should, then Banchero and Christian Wood are both fours. And I don't think the three of them can play together. And so I think if you take Banchero, you're saying, you know, Christian Wood's on the trading block or he's on his way out. You take Chet, you've got some flexibility with position because I don't think that he can play. I don't even think he could play the four right now, to be honest. I think he's running up and down the court. He looks like Poku from OKC. That's what keeps popping in my head. And if y'all know, Poku's playing the three right now. And so I think, you know, if you got Chet at the three, Wood at the four, Sengun at the five, that's a very long, skilled front line. I mean, Chet is almost like, you know, he brings some of that Evan Mobley defensive versatility but he also can play a little bit more on the perimeter than Evan Mobley. And so you could see him at three. Even Mobley was discussed as possibly being able to play the three some. So you can see the correlation there. I think you get Banchero, you've got to play him at the four and you've got to play him inside. And he's got that NBA body. He's ready to bang and right now. So I think the decision, if you had to make the decision, if you got to choose, it's based on what philosophically you think the future of the franchise is and what direction you want to go. Now, obviously, if we don't have the first pick, then we get what we get and you figure it out later, you know. But if you have the opportunity to choose, then it's like, you know, choose your own adventure type of thing. Which way do you want to go? What do you want to see? And I could make a legit case for either one. They're so close and you've gotten so many building blocks already that I think you could make a pick based on fit if you think the evaluation is 50-50. If you think it's an equal evaluation, then I think you can choose, you can go by fit. Because you have Sengun and Green, I think you can do that.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a good point about the fit. I mean, sometimes it comes down to that even more than, you know, well, this player is marginally better than this other player, so I'm going to go with them. So I think that's a really good point about Christian Wood. That's going to factor into a lot of decisions the Rockets have coming up, because he's going to be asking for max money. Whether he deserves it or not, that's a whole different story. But I don't see him asking for anything less than max money on his next contract. So that's going to be an interesting part of all of this. So what was your opinion, Tony, on just last night? Because we saw Paolo, he started out fast. I mean, he's 20 points in the first half, and then he started having some issues like cramps. He didn't play as well in the second half. And Chet was kind of – he did okay, nothing special. It was just more about – it also seems like Gonzaga is – they have more of an overall team. They're not dependent on Chet to be their number one guy like Duke is with Paolo. So what was your opinion on that and just overall on the draft picks that are playing right now?
So before I answer, I think we need to talk to O'Connor, because I believe he stole my podcast notes.
That's how it is sometimes we have three people on.
He said everything that I was about to say, and I'm listening to it. I'm like, is this man in my head? Like, what's going on? As I was looking at the game, I believe Paolo, I mean, he started to show out in the first half. I believe he was making himself known. As far as the overall impact of either player, I really don't look for that in college, because college is more about the coaches than the actual players. So when I look at a guy like Chet, not really doing a whole lot or being special, it's not because of him. It's more because the coaches in their system are the stars in the NCAA, and it's totally different in the NBA. So I really don't take anything from the game. It was a great game. It was really fun to watch. And I think both guys are going to be good to really good pros. So I don't think this one matchup really defines them in totality. As far as what they mean to the Rockets, I believe O'Conn, like, he hit it out the park on this one. And I'm probably going to piss a lot of people in Rockets fandom off.
Won't be the first time.
It will not be the first time, and it won't be the last. But, yeah, we're going to have to get comfortable with Christian Wood being on the team. And I think if you look at where all the signs are pointing, is that Wood is one of the cornerstones of the rebuild. I think one of the big reasons why Mobley wasn't chosen over Green is because Christian Wood was already there. And I think that Stone wants to move forward with Christian Wood. And I think that, as O'Conn said, his choice on this next draft is either going to solidify that or is going to put it into question. Because like he said, the one weak point on the team so far is the small forward spot. So it's going to come down to who's going to fill that small forward role. And I believe that this draft is going to come down to filling that small forward spot. So like Okan said, if I was going to choose between Paolo and Chet, then I would probably choose Chet because he can stretch out to that three to go with Sengun, Wood, KPJ, and Jalen Green. I think that that's the way it's going to go.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad y'all brought up, you know, as far as it really doesn't come down to just one game. I know a lot of Rockets fans were excited about that, but really in college, like you said, Tony, it comes down to coaching. It comes down to the team around you. And Gonzaga is more of a senior-led team anyway, because right now Chet's not even the number one guy on Gonzaga's team. So they're led by more senior leadership. So he may not get the big numbers or the big stats. So, and I think that coaches and general manager, I think Rafael Stones, they all look at that. You know, they're not just looking at just one game like, oh, okay, Paolo's the number one guy. He scored 21 points. Chet only scored 6 or 8 points. So, yeah, I mean, that's a really good point, you know, that it's the overall fit. It's the overall what you think they can do in the NBA. And I think that it's going to kind of go back and forth all year when it comes down to that. One more question before we wrap this up, and both of y'all brought up Christian Wood, and I want to get your opinion real quickly on that. I'll start with you, Tony. First off, do you think that Christian Wood deserves the max? And second off, do you think the Rockets will actually pay him the max? Let's just say that he has a good year, not great, but, you know, you still see the potential that he can become an all-star. So do you think they're going to pay him, and do you think that he deserves the max money? I don't want to say deserve because you deserve whatever they give you, but should he get the max amount from the Rockets?
It's really hard to answer that question because, if you go by the max, I mean, it's more about projection than it is about current play. So it's going to be up to Stone to say, do you think that this guy can get to the max level within the contract terms? So if you say, okay, I'm giving you the full 5-year max, can you be a max level player within that 5 years? I mean, because that's what we've been seeing of all these guys that have been getting max contracts and rookie max contracts is – it's not about the current play, but can they get to that level? Because we've seen that with, as an example, like Michael Porter. And you have to think, can Christian Wood get to that level? I believe that he can personally because he has all the tools to get there. And I think he's shown a lot of flashes. But he's also had to be unselfish to help other guys develop. And I think you've seen that in his frustrations sometimes, but he's also been very good about it because he's not taking every shot. He's not like, how can I say this? He hasn't tried to boss, like be a big boss at the team and put other guys down to build himself up. I mean, I think he's really trying to be a part of the team element, and he wants to be the guy or one of the guys. And I think you've seen that in his comments where he said he wants to be a franchise player, and people ask him about Kevin Porter. He's like, why can't we both be franchise players?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And because that sounds like a guy that wants to build with the team. You know what I mean? So I don't think it's about whether he deserves it. It's about whether the Stones see him as that guy going forward. And also, I think it's about rewarding a guy that came here on certain terms. Those terms were immediately obliterated, and he didn't give up on the team.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're kind of rewarding a guy for believing in your vision. So I don't think it's as much about the play as it is about, you know, him wanting to build with the team and build himself up in unison.
Yeah, so that's a good point about whether you think he's going to be in 5 years. I think that's kind of a good point and something I want to ask Okan. Excuse me. Do you think in whenever his contract runs out, do you think that he will be that max type player? And I mean, if so, is it pretty much a no-brainer Rockets should go ahead and give him that max money and just build around him and Jalen Green and Kevin Porter Jr. and Aaron Shangoon? So what's your opinion on that, Okan?
So my opinion on the whole Christian Wood contract, it's multidimensional. Right now, do I think Christian Wood is worth a max? No, I don't. But I do think, you know, I think Jared Allen got $20 million. I think Capella got, you know, $22 million or something like that. I think right now Christian Wood is probably worth $20 to $25 million. And so he's being underpaid based on the contract we gave him. Is he worth a max? No, but I do think he's worth $20 to $25 million. Could he be worth, you know, the max next year? Yes, I do believe that. And, you know, would I be willing to sign Christian Wood to a max, even if I don't think he's worth a max? I probably would do that as well. And here's why. The Rockets don't really have anybody that is a core piece that's coming up for max type money anytime soon, right? Kevin Porter Jr., he's got another couple of years on his rookie deal, but there's also a lot of other things that would go into whether you give KPJ a certain level contract or not. And probably 95% of it isn't even basketball related. That's a whole other story.
Yeah.
Jalen Green, we're talking way down the line where he's going to be in line for something like that. Shingun, same thing. Whoever they draft in this next draft, same thing. Okay. You know, Eric Gordon is going to come off the salary cap. John Wall is going to come off the salary cap. So those guys are going to come off the salary cap. You got to pay somebody. Who are you paying? You're saying you don't want to pay Wood. Well, who are you paying? You can't let Wood go, have a big hole there, and then you just expect that, like, somebody else's free agent who didn't build with you is just going to come take your cap space. I mean, I think we know cap space doesn't mean anything. You're better off paying a player to either keep them on your team or paying a player to have that salary slot so that you can make a trade with them if you need to for somebody else. And so Christian Wood is a very talented player. He's worth a lot of money. Whether you think he's worth $25 million, $24 million, or $30 million, his salary slot on the roster is valuable. And if you decide he's not the guy, you could put him in a trade for somebody else down the line who you think is the guy, and you have a $30 million player or $25 million player that is attractive and can help a team. Versus just having cap space, you know, cap space never won a championship. Cap space never made a trade. And so to just say you want to let somebody go get draft picks, have a big void on in your cap. Well, then how are you planning on getting these so-called max free agents that people are clamoring for? You're better off having, you know, like Ben Simmons with Philadelphia. They're trying to get a Dame Lillard, a James Harden. Well, they have a Ben Simmons to put in there to try to fish for. So if they didn't have a Ben Simmons to trade, they wouldn't have their eyes, you know, starry eyes for Damian Lillard if they didn't have a large piece to put into the package. And so Christian Wood helps your team. He fits. Him and Silas are close. He came because Coach Silas was coached him way back when, and they have a good relationship. I think you can build a very great team around KPJ, Green, Wood, Shingun. I think Christian Wood getting whatever money he gets does not preclude you from signing anybody or doing anything with your team in the future. He's an asset. You're getting him at below market value now. So if you've got to do a little bit market correction, I'm not against that. So to your point, do I think he's worth a max Like by play, not yet. Would I pay him the max if I had to? Like if it was, you know, gun to my head and you're like, pay him the max or he's going to walk, I would probably pay him the max. And, you know, he's not going to hurt your team and he's going to be an asset. And, you know, I think he could be a building block. And, you know, he took a chance coming here when, you know, we were in flux and, you know, he says he loves it in Houston and we should want to reward guys that want to be here. Cause there are a lot of people that didn't want to be in Houston or don't want to be in Houston. And so a guy that wants to be here and can play. And I think the word Tony was looking for is Christian Wood hasn't hijacked the offense. He hasn't hijacked the team. He's had some frustrations, but he didn't take those frustrations and start jacking a bunch of bad shots. And, you know, he's not cussing out his teammates. And, you know, and so to me, you know, Christian Wood, his progression through the NBA has been a longer road than it would have been because of a lot of off the court and personality maturity things. And so I think he knows that. And that's why he is reacting the way he is now, is because he knows that what held him back prior to now was non on the court stuff. I mean, he was averaging like 30 and 15 in the G League for like 3 years. So we know it was never on court talent. I think, you know, playing more pick and rolls, I think playing the four and the five, playing five and small, I think all these things will help him get back to where he was last year before the injury. But it's very nuanced, and I would probably keep him and utilize him as one of the building blocks, because to just trade him for draft picks, we have a million draft picks from the Harden trade. We got, you know, everybody keeps saying for draft picks, and I'm like, how many 18, 19, 20 year olds do you want on one team? You just drafted four of them. KJ Martin is 20, KPJ is 21. You know, I mean, you don't need a team full of high school and college kids. And so I'm fine with having Jayshon Tate and Christian Wood be 25, 26, 27 years old while the other guys come along with them. So
yeah, I mean, and that's the point that, you know, you need to definitely, we're trying to drive home to a lot of people, is you don't want a bunch of young players. I mean, it's great to have it. I mean, it looks good. It's good to throw out stats like, oh, the Rockets the youngest team in the league possibly and all this stuff, but you do need players that have been around the league for a long time. You need players like Christian Wood that's, you know, he didn't start off, he wasn't some, you know, five-star recruit and some highly touted player. And, he, you know, he's been pretty much throughout the league, throughout the G League. I mean, the Rockets have a lot of players like that. And that's another thing people need to keep in mind when they're evaluating the Rockets. The Rockets are depending on players that, like Christian Wood, who bounced from team to team. Jayshon Tate didn't even get drafted. KPJ was given away for a second-round pick that's never even going to get conveyed to Cleveland. Rockets have a lot of players that basically no other team wanted. They're trying to put together and trying to win games and develop at the same time. So this is not going to be a traditional rebuilding process. So people just need to keep that in mind, need to calm down. Even if the Rockets lose by 20 tonight, it's not the end of the world. We don't need to fire Coach Silas and send Rafael Stone packing and all this other crazy stuff. I mean, you need to give the Rockets this year to figure out exactly what they want to do. And then next year, that's when you should start really seeing real progress. That's when you can, to me, that's when you can start holding people more accountable. This year is still an experimental project, and you just need to calm down and let it play out. Before we wrap it up, I want to give both of y'all fellas again a chance to let everybody know where to find you. So why don't we start off with you, Tony? Where can they find all your great content and takes?
You can find me. I don't know if I would call my takes great.
Of course.
I mean, they're great to me. I don't know if they're
great
to
you. That's all that matters.
y'all can find me at @Coltrane_TNT on Twitter.
And what about you, Akon? Where can they find your great take and medical advice?
Thanks, LaShawn. You can find me at O'Keezy Sports PT on Twitter or www.campusmotion.org for my physical therapy practice. Either of those mediums, if you've got questions about yourself or what's going on with any players on the team and injuries that come up, feel free to DM me, reach out by email through the website or anything else. I'm happy to share the knowledge and pull the curtain back behind some of the ambiguous lower leg injury reevaluation in 1 week, all the platitudes that the teams release because they don't want to give out medical information for competitive reasons. You know, sometimes I am able to decode some of that based on the timelines and what they're saying. And so I try to put that information out there whenever possible.
Yeah, we definitely appreciate it. I'm sure I'll be reaching back out to you. And of course, both of you guys, I'm sure I'll be seeing you in our Rockets chat that sometimes gets, I'll just say, interesting at times. So I definitely appreciate y'all both jumping on today.
Thanks for having us.
Of course, of course.
Yeah, no doubt, LB.
I'll definitely be having y'all back on soon. That's going to do it for today's episode. So if you haven't already done so, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And be sure to follow the Apollo HOU account for blogs, merch, video, podcasts, and more original Houston sports content not found anywhere else. As always, I appreciate everyone listening, and we look forward to having you back for our next episode of the Launchpad Podcast covering your Houston Rockets and also your Rio Grande Valley Vipers.